Welcome to the Star Zone. I'm Patty Spagnuolo. From resource fairs geared towards our students to arts and entertainment aimed to connect with our community, Lansing Community College hosts many events throughout the year, and the Star Zone gives you a rundown on what's on the way, where it's happening, and how you can get into the zone at LCC. Well, hello, welcome to the show. Today, my guest is Taylor Vaught. Taylor has been in many roles at LCC since 2011, all of which have focused on helping students. He is a proud LCC alum and is a graduate of Siena Heights University. Taylor currently works in the admissions office assisting students with their next steps in the college process. Taylor, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Taylor today is here to talk about the Program and Career Showcase. So let's start out with what is this event, first of all?
So the Program and Career Showcase, this is an event for departments to get out, departments and programs to get out and just to toot their own horn, just to talk about their program, give those fun facts like we're, you know, ranked number 3 in the nation, or honestly, just like give some information to these students. So help them make a decision about college.
And when is this event being held?
This is going to be on March 25th, which I believe is the last Wednesday of March coming up.
Okay.
And it'll be housed at our LCC West Campus. It's going to be in their main mall hallway type area. But we'll have as many departments as possible out and just getting to showcase their areas.
And so who is the audience for this event?
So the audience is mainly prospective students. A lot of this is detailed out to high schoolers just so that way they can come in, try to help make a decision on the career pathway that they want to get into. But honestly, anybody who's interested in enrolling at LCC or even current students show up too, just in case they might change their mind from psychology to biology.
So I noticed it's running from 4 to 6. Are you hoping to get like the parents as well? So in other words, the buses aren't coming from the schools. People are coming after they get out of work and that kind of stuff. Is it like a family event?
We always welcome family because even though there's one student who might come, most of the time they bring a sibling that might be a freshman in high school and they're still kind of interested in stuff. So we want anybody who's interested. Family is always welcome. Bring your auntie, your uncle, your grandma, your grandpa, everybody.
Should they register beforehand?
Yes. It is not required, but it just helps with us, one, being able to see how many people are showing up, but also brand new students who register and attend the event will be entered for a $500 scholarship drawing.
Oh, that's awesome. Do they have to be present to win?
Yes, preferably. Okay. We will go off of who has been there, so okay. I'll make sure for sure it's somebody who actually attended. But they, if they register, attend, and enroll for fall of 2026, they'll be entered to win.
Okay. Many of the LCC programs do roll into bachelor's degrees for transfer. So if a student knows that they want to transfer, is this still an event for them to go to?
Yes. One, they can kind of get a little bit of an idea of the classes they're going to be taking here at LCC, but so many instructors in each area, they're professionals in their fields. So they can kind of help navigate like, yeah, for sure, this is what it's going to look like here at LCC. Once you get over to Central or U of M, this might be what you're looking at once you get there too.
And of course, our West Campus is just beautiful. It's easy to park. I love West Campus.
It is. So it's one of the best.
Yeah. So whenever there's an event there, I feel like it's a great big carnival or something. But so what kind of activities will be available?
There's all sorts of them. So areas such as like our geospatial program, if you haven't seen the drone flyers out there, they have the robot dog, which is really cool. It gets to interact with students. Biology last year was one of our biggest displays because they were up there concocting something, but it had they were on the second floor. I was on the first floor, you know, mingling with students, but they had everybody's attention upstairs. So I'm already super excited to have them back again. Welding is going to be out there just in case somebody's looking for a little bit of hands-on like view of how things work with that. The health area, such as nursing and our EMTs, like they had actual displays show people about like CPR and all that stuff too. So it's all sorts of events, all sorts of learning areas for it.
Wow. That just sounds like so much fun, like a family night out. I don't know why. Yeah. To me, it's like, oh my gosh,
we got really good interaction last year and people loved it. And I just got so much good feedback from students. So
awesome.
I'm glad to have it back.
Do you guys do any follow-up, like when a student applies or surveys that say, you know, what events did you attend at LCC that really made an impact?
Not just yet, but that is coming up. So
we are
utilizing some new systems here and trying to track our students a little bit better. So that way we can be like, hey, yeah, I know you came to this event. Like, yeah, did you have any specific feedback? Or is there something about this that you want to see in other events that we do?
Right. Yeah. And that kind of also tells you then what events are, you know, worthwhile.
Yes.
What does the community need?
Yep.
You know? So what do you think, just switching gears a little bit from the event, what do you think is the most confusing thing to students looking at LCC's entire list of programs? Because sometimes it's almost like there's too much.
There is. I believe we have over 200 degrees and certificates available for students. So that might be a little overwhelming at times. I think if you have any idea of where you would want to go with this, like for your major, you would try to focus in that area. They actually just updated the degrees and programs page to have a search engine on it, like built in. So it's kind of nice if you're thinking about any of the sciences, you can just start typing it in and it's going to shorten that list tremendously for you. You're not going to see the trades, or you might not see psychology. That way you can kind of focus on just the sciences. And if there's any confusion on it, I always tell students, maybe just start with the general. Like, don't even have to worry about picking something specific right now. Start with a general studies degree. You can get your main transfer stuff done, but also you'll have that freedom to be like, you know what, I like psychology. I want to pursue this. Or maybe I want to look at a trade or something within the health careers area too.
You know, the other thing that I think sometimes is confusing for students is they see the name of like the degree, but they don't really understand what the work life is like.
Mm-hmm.
Like what you're really going to be doing with this degree. You know, like maybe I'm throwing this out there because I have no idea. But like, let's say if you're going into some environmental science type of thing, you could maybe end up testing water across the country for a specific chemical, you know, whatever. I mean, but we don't know that. And it's like, is that highlighted anywhere? Like, you know, here's what you could be doing.
That depends. I have noticed in some of our descriptions, like it does kind of give a guiding, like this is intended for students looking to go in. Honestly, for most of our biology stuff, especially for students who are looking to transfer on, it specifies like this degree particulars for those transferring on to 4 years. So it doesn't totally specify like, hey, you could be out here, yeah, testing water or anything like that. That one is more of a probably talking to somebody in the department, one of the instructors who's done this out in the field before.
Okay. Yeah. So they get that experience.
I was like, they get to come do that at the program and career showcase.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. They get to see, hey, yeah. I just always think that's important because I think students don't always connect those dots. And there's some really good programs out there, but because of the name,
yeah,
you would never know. You'd never make that connection. I mean, sometimes I want to go back and be a student now when I realize,
yeah.
Oh, I could be doing this. Wow. So what's your favorite thing about this event?
My favorite is the student interaction. I love getting to meet brand new students who are just getting started out at LCC. Those who, especially when they have like unique questions like that, because I'm a troubleshooter type guy. So if I don't know it, then I'm like, oh, we got something to work on. So I'm you know, working the scene, being able to go around and be like, oh, you should talk to this instructor over here or this department over here. So that's one of my biggest part. I love interacting with students. And honestly, it's kind of nice getting the community together. Like I've gotten good responses from departments and like they're excited to get out and meet students too. I really like interaction. So I think being able to facilitate this is one of my favorite things.
That is awesome. I agree with you. I just recently did a podcast about Big STEAM and they were just so happy to come and talk about their program. And I think, you know, a lot of times we put faculty and programs behind the doors, right? That
yep.
This is not the face. But now with our events, we're bringing that into the forefront. So students are seeing the instructors.
Yep.
Oh, this is the person I'd be taking the lessons from. This is the person that's going to be showing me, you know, how to do this for my career.
Mm-hmm.
And it really makes a difference. I think you make that connection with that person and, you know, you feel more comfortable.
I think that's definitely a big point of it, too. Again, as you said, I'm a product of LCC. Anybody who's looking to go in the computer support technician area or any of the CIT programs out there, I'm like, oh, you're going to love them. I've actually seen one instructor today, Adam Richardson. He's a great guy and just a great instructor. And anytime a student tells me he has him, I'm like, you're going to love that guy. Like,
like
he's
awesome.
Just, yeah, he's very passionate about teaching. And I'm with most instructors that I've dealt with, they just have the student's best interests at their heart, you know, so they just want to make sure they can perform as best as they can when they leave their class.
Right, right. Yeah. And I, you know, you just hit upon something else too, is working here at LCC, but also being an alum of LCC, I am as well. And I think that gives us just a leg up, don't you?
I think so.
We know the experience.
Yep.
We, you know?
Students will ask me like, oh, how is Intro to Psych? And I'm like, oh, it's actually a pretty fun class. You know, like you get to learn a lot, but I always tell them too, I'm like, it's kind of a no answer is a wrong answer class because it's your interpretation of the material that we're going over. So I was like, as long as you're responding, you're going to probably do really well in that class. I was like, but you got to do the reading. You can't skip over all the stuff there.
Darn. Maybe you should be an instructor. Did you ever think of that?
I have thought about doing adjunct here, but
there you go.
It's just, you know, life has been life. And so hopefully one day, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that would be outstanding. I think it's helpful when people have had the backgrounds that we've had, and then you turn around and be the instructor. It just makes it so much more flavorful for the student to resonate and go, oh yeah, you went through this, you did this.
Yep.
So this isn't anything new to you, you know?
It is not. And I still go through it. I'm actually in classes right now.
Oh really?
Yep.
Okay.
I have cloud computing and Microsoft Network Server.
Oh my gosh. Good for you. You're just going to keep on learning.
That's all I go.
Yeah. Hey, you know, and that's really what LCC is about too, right? You know, you can just, even if you have the degree, you can just keep on learning,
because
that's kind of what you have to do. If you're not growing, you're probably dying. So so
what is that, the get busy living or get busy dying?
Right. That's very good. Okay, so we're having way too much fun here. Anything else about the program and career showcase that I didn't ask you that you kind of want to focus on, or anything that's jumping out that, hey, they're going to have a helicopter there this year? And they're not. I'm just...
No helicopters. So yeah, please. It would be awesome if we did, because we do have aviation maintenance. They're going to be out there.
Nice. Okay.
But honestly, my big part is just come out, have some fun, get to talk to departments. We'll have a few beverages and whatnot available for students to, or guests, anybody who's coming. But honestly, just come out, ask questions, have a good time, and hopefully, you know, we'll be able to see you in fall of 2026 as well.
And, you know, I always think, too, everybody's just here to help.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Don't be afraid to ask whatever question. We're just here. We want to help you. We want to, you know, see you succeed. So, well, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah.
And that's the Program and Career Showcase on Wednesday, March 25th from 4 to 6 p.m. at LCC's West Campus. All right. Thank you, everyone, and wishing you well. Thanks for joining us here on the Star Zone. For more information on this episode, visit lccconnect.org. You can also find a complete list of Lansing Community College events by visiting lcc.edu/calendar. Until next time, thanks for getting into the zone.
Examining the issues and topics that affect our lives from the local level to the world stage. Listen to the programs of LCC Connect anytime at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Lansing Community College's downtown and west campuses offer conference and event spaces that can accommodate over 500 attendees. LCC offers hybrid meeting capabilities, in-house catering, free event parking, and on-site customer service. For more information about LCC's conference and event spaces, visit lcc.edu and search conference.
Hi, I'm Melissa Kaplan, and I host a show called Galaxy Forum on LCC Connect. It's all about the creativity in our classrooms and on campus here at LCC and the connections we have with the community. You can catch Galaxy Forum here on LCC Connect or listen anytime at lccconnect.org.
Wake up and text. Text and eat.
Mm-mm.
Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Returning to school can be a challenge. If you're a recent high school grad, a new Michigan Reconnect participant at LCC, or a GED holder, we want to help you succeed with extra support in reading, writing, and math. LCC's Coalition for College and Career Readiness presents College Connect, a four-week, no-cost initiative created to prepare students with the tools needed to succeed at LCC. College Connect begins in July, but seating is limited. To find deadline and enrollment information, visit lcc.edu/cc.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Hello there, this is Terry Denise, a Lansing Community College student and your host of Ripper, an LCC Connect podcast where I interview others and ask about their unique efforts and connections in, around, and beyond the community of Michigan's capital city. Hello, how is everybody? I'm sure I can't hear you. That's okay, but I'm sure you're doing well. I have Brendan here with me today. He's one of our producers here at LCC Connect. He is going to be speaking with me about film.
Yay, film.
I'm so excited because I believe I had mentioned beforehand about Robert Eggers and Nosferatu, his version, his 2024 version. In some other podcast that I had put out. And I'm rounding back again to cover some topics and some interesting takes on the film because I, for one, am excited about our cold weather. No, I'm not that excited. I'm excited because the cold weather is that time where a lot of interesting points of view about what we are experiencing while we're in the cold come to view in very creative ways. We get a lot of the winter holiday specials. So we get our the curmudgeon-like characters like Dr. Seuss's Grinch, who stole Christmas. We get our Krampus stories. Scrooge, bah humbug. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of, a lot of monster stories. I cannot wait to go over Krampusnacht, by the way, which hopefully I'll be covering soon as well. But there's a lot of, even in music, there's metal artists that just primarily black metal is known to have an expression of what it feels like to be in the cold because a lot of black metal comes from the North European nations, such as Norway and Sweden, Finland. And a lot of them will have this sound that sounds very far away. It sounds very cold. And it sounds like there's a lot of echo and a lot of very, so to me, I enjoy that a lot because when we finally hit our seasons of just, the thing I think of is Monty Python's, there's this caricature of, what was it, Gilliam would draw those, right?
Yeah.
You'd have the downfall of the seasons and when it would just be fall, you would just see all of the leaves fall at once.
Right.
And that makes me think of what that happens here when the snow falls in Michigan and it's just a, and that's all you see and all you hear for the next 6 months of your life, pretty much. So yeah, listening to black metal often helps with getting through those season, right, that part of the season, because it's just like, oh, cold, desperate.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's so windy and everything, my bones and fire and yada, yada, yada. But I think of Dark Thrones, Transylvanian Hunger. which Transylvania is where our famous vampires come from. At least the European versions of.
Yeah, definitely.
So that makes me think of a lot of great things to dove into Nosferatu on this. Nosferatu, by the way, coming from iterations of vampire tales. And one of the most famous ones are of Bram Stoker, the Irish author's. His tale from of Dracula, which was more a love story.
Yeah, sure.
Than anything. So there have been many, many iterations of Dracula itself and even portrayed on screen as Nosferatu. F.W. Murnau back in 1922. Yeah, we see that portrayed, that story of this forlorn dead creature coming to seek its love of, and it's almost as if love cannot end for these sure. creatures. Like they're so, they go out, they're horrific things, you know, blood is the life kind of a thing. They go out for blood. They go out, they're eating people and tearing people apart and whatnot. And it's the one thing that they are really in search of, it seems, is this piece of love, this thing that's dressed, that's so far away, much like what it feels like when you're listening to black metal. I, for one, am a huge fan of the newer version of Nosferatu, the 2024 version, which is Robert Eggers' version. And he took a lot from many other predecessors before him, even Francis Ford Coppola's version. There was many nods that this man got into as a director. He is also a child of playwrights and directors. So a lot of his, a lot of what I saw when I saw this film twice, two times in a week, actually, as I went on, I believe, the eve of Christmas and then again on New Year's Day.
Okay.
So I was obsessed with this film and I'm like, I have to see this again on the big screen. And I took notes the second time like a nerd. I had a notepad, and I have since lost the notepad, so I'm just trying to recollect anything that when I saw it on the screen the first time, taking and pulling the look and the feel of the film, and I immediately thought of the stage when I saw this film. So then I kind of did a little Wikipedia research on Eggers, and then I found out that, yes, he is the child of theater people, and it made so much sense. I actually was in a version of Dracula.
Okay.
A 3-hour play, mind you, back when the old firehouse was still a playhouse back many, many years ago. And I played one of the dead brides of Dracula. But that whole play itself, which is another, you know, just another version of Bram Stoker's, was very, very true to Bram Stoker's version of the book. So the play makes sense when you see it on stage and it's just written out. The characters and the whole intention of Dracula to, you know, he's misses his wife that he lost many years previous. And when he comes back from being dead and whatnot, and he sees someone that reminds him of this love. Now, the stage play had to be cut down to 3 hours.
Yeah, yeah. It's like 3 hours, that's dedication.
From the book, which is nothing but journals.
You're right.
It's just a bunch of journals from different characters of the story. And that's it.
Right. It's not like a linear narrative in a traditional sense.
Not at all, which is very interesting as well.
Yeah.
But to adapt it to the stage is one thing, but to adapt it to screen and then have a different kind of story that got pulled out of that that version of vampirism led us into what became Nosferatu, Count Orlok being the monster, being this old soul that comes back to life. Max Schreck's version of Count Orlok is still haunting. He's still a scary figure and very weird.
Yeah, with those long pointy fingers.
The big head, the long shadows even, just his gaze even. Did he blink once in that film?
Ooh, that's a good question.
It's weird.
Maybe not.
I don't know. They still don't know if this man was alive or dead, or if he was even a vampire himself, which is when, to speak of another version of Nosferatu, the John Malkovich, Shadow of the Vampire, which Malkovich.
Yes.
Marriage was the director of that one. That came out in 2000, which is basically just a story about Max Schreck himself.
Yeah.
And him actually being a vampire in real life and taking that story and putting another story on top of that story, which it had lore upon it. But it turned out that Max Schreck is actually just a vet, and he had likely had PTSD from all the wars that were going on at the time back in the early 20th century. Much like the producer of the first Nosferatu, the 1922 version. So a lot of these people that were working on these films were living during a time where the First World War was just about to start or had already started. So you had people working in these films that already saw real life horrors that they were going through. And a thousand yard stare, I think is what they call it when you're, when you've got that PTSD.
Yeah.
And you just stare off into the distance, which I guess worked for Max Schreck and us. And that version of his version of Count Orlok. Also, I believe it is the Dracula story is that he was a soldier himself in some iterations. I can't remember if that was in the journals or not.
You're right. I don't recall. But I do know that in regards to the myth of Dracula itself, like that this is fertile territory to explore this character.
Because there's so many different versions of this particular style of vampire. That we get our, like, okay, so first of all, let's just, with the 1922 version, German silent film. So we've got our German expressionism, set designs, lighting, the type of film that it's structured to be, which adds to this horror effect that we get from the film. It's silent. You've got this shadow, a lot of shadow and light at play here. It just enhances the creepiness of this being traditionally one of the first horror films, the other one being The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. But with that, I'm just looking at a picture of Max Schreck right now and I just can't stop laughing because the way he looks is terrifying. He even has a terrifying look on his face. Like he's afraid of himself almost.
Sure.
He just doesn't know. So the character actor that put this on, it did a great job, I thought. And because it had that effect in the first place, and so many other versions of this kind of vampire, which became Dracula in the later horror films that we see in the classic horror films, Bela Lugosi's Dracula.
Doesn't have a mustache.
He is one of my favorites. No mustache. Not so much that creeper, but right. I think Lugosi, because then we got into the talkie era. So it's taking out that silent effect. So you get to actually put spooky sounds in. So there's a lot more going on in these films that they were enhancing everything with technologically wise. But with Bella, his eyes are those things, which is same thing with Max Schreck. He just has a different kind of eye. Bella's is more romantic, I thought.
Sure.
He's just had this, it's a very come to me.
Yeah, definitely.
Hither stare. And I think it started with Bella, which got the more romance into that, the whole feeling of vampirism and whatnot, and that even more so on top of Stoker's original writing and whatnot. But I think that the whole cloak, the whole hiding one's face and the bats, a lot of just turning into the bat. What was the devil bat that came out as well during this era and time? There's a lot of more like, let's suss this Dracula character up, you know? Let's like put more action into these sequences. Let's have more of, you know, the iteration of the Nosferatu is the old, that was the first version, I think, where light affects the vampire.
Right. Yeah, that was not a part of the novel's version of the character.
Right. So you got to see a lot more of that pulled out in these later versions. So we go on to, there's the Hammer films, which has very buxom babes and a lot of like 666 and a lot of devil worship and whatnot. Lots more blood. And then even more so the ploitation era. So you've got like Black Dracula out here, like with the fro and freaking people out. It's such, gosh, die Dracula, die. You've got Brides of Dracula versions. You go on to Andy Warhol Presents, which goes, that becomes even more romantic, where it's just nothing but lace and these soft focus features. And, yeah, you get into the depth of everything. And then all of a sudden we get this version that comes out in the early 90s, 92, I believe it was, which had Winona Ryder, Keanu Reeves, Gary Oldman's version of the vampire of Dracula, which is where I think that my first embracing of this culture came to be, where it's just like, I really like this creature. This is my favorite horror thing ever. Bella came later because you couldn't quite see all of the silent films.
Oh, sure,
so
it would
much.
Be difficult.
So the 90s spurned a lot more of this, like, resurgence, I think, of a lot more of the old style classic horror films. And so you saw a lot more, even Typo Negative, to reference another metal band, they actually put their own score to the Nosferatu version of 1922's out back in 98. So you have even the metal culture, which is mixed in with the goth culture and metal and all black and dark and and romance, a lot of romance, a lot of weird vampire culture came from that era, which it's fun. But you also, in the early 90s, we're coming out of the late 80s, which was coming out of the AIDS era.
Yeah, sure.
So not coming out of, excuse me, like, I guess more stepping into a well-known part of the AIDS era and culture. So you have a lot of people that are intensely aware of, like, blood and romance and this hypersexualization and the fear and scapegoating and people, it was another kind of plague effect going on.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a good point.
And blaming cultures, blaming gay culture and whatnot.
For sure.
And when it was just like, no, this is just, it's a thing that even your newborn can receive through blood.
It could be in you.
It can be in transfusions, even if you just needed, a blood transfusion for something. So I think that when that Dracula, Francis Ford Coppola's hit, I think it hit hard with a lot of people because there's a way to look at it where if you had lost somebody to AIDS or you were there going through it yourself, if you are just affecting everybody or anybody around you, there's this the point of the film, one of the taglines is the blood is the life. And to take that into another romantic point of view where Gary Oldman's Dracula is laced in with Winona Ryder's Mina, it's this ever aching, like, my lost love. Like, where are you at? I need you to survive.
Very 90s.
Very 90s, very, like, hard-hitting. And then you add in this element of, like, there's this sickness going on with the blood even. In the film, you see the blood transfusion happening itself. So you see, like, literally the sickness. They're trying to get the sickness out of some of the characters by doing a blood transfusion. And then we just find out, like, is it working? Is it not working? And at the same time, you've got people going through this literally in the hospitals. So I just sometimes wonder, because I was so young when it came out, but I, in my older age, had started to think about that in a different way. And I'm like, I wonder how this really affected, like, other certain people that might have been very sensitive to that in a sense of a good way, where it's just like love lasts forever. It through the death, through undead even. So I don't know. It very romantic, like, to the point of, like, coming back to even the original film version of the Nosferatu with Robert Eggers' version. him coming out with the 2024 version after we had our COVID lockdown, and then that being another type of, I guess you could say, by the way, spoilers. If you haven't seen the 2024 version,
or you're talking about COVID,
spoilers, COVID was and still is a thing. Yeah, it's just weird because the timing of everything. We've got the, what was it, public domain,
right?
Which brought this. I believe that hit the mark where it was just okay for him to be able to get into it.
Right. Yeah. That's what, you know, a big part of the history of this Dracula and Nosferatu famous copyright battle. Bram Stoker's widow successfully sued the filmmakers.
This specifically, story.
Right, is that, and like I said, I believe she was successful in curbing, like it wasn't able to be distributed.
And this was one of the first kinds of films that had that, like there was all of a sudden issues with domain rights to to retell the story over and over again.
Exactly, yeah, it's a big common theme, you know, with all sorts of media around this time.
So we fortunately got our version of Nosferatu, 2024 Eggers' version, which he had actually been working on a screenplay for this for like 20 years or something.
Yeah. Apparently he was in a play version of it when he was in high school.
I wonder if that was also a 3-hour version. It's a... Anyway, it was a good show that we did. We put on a very good show. So I wouldn't be surprised if Eggers' version was also amazing, because it did spur him to write a screenplay, to put it to film. So for his version coming out nearly 100 years after a different plague had hit, pandemic had hit, the Spanish flu. So that coincided with the original Nosferatu's version. So yeah, to hit 100 years later, the plague is prevalent in the story. You've got, because you've got transatlantic trading going on, and a lot more people are shipping themselves overseas. You've got a lot of people coming to America now, you know, and so there is a lot of this idea of, once again, scapegoating, where all of a sudden there's plague in the area where this weird foreigner steps off of a ship, and all of a sudden we've got a plague. Like, get these people out of here. Get this monster out of here. And it's really horrifying when you think about that, perhaps this from Murnau's version and whatnot, but when you tell the story of this, and it's like, who's the real monster here? It's because the plague came from the rats, which came from the fleas. And that's it. That's all. It's just diseased fleas, rats, and that's it. Because because they're creatures that are running around in their own filth and whatnot. You got a lot of creatures that can carry these diseases around, and that's all it's coming from. But when you are putting that to a figure, a human or a human-like humanoid figure, and then you're carrying that to thinking about who had in the past, and presently, you can say, has been scapegoating as disease carriers, people that go and pillage and take people's things, and it becomes this ultra fear-ridden crisis of, you're to blame, it's all your fault, and... So I don't know. It's just an interesting point of view where, with the COVID-19, the coronavirus, how that was scapegoated. The Spanish flu is literally called the Spanish flu. It's like, there's a lot of these present themes that keep coming up over and over again. And you see a lot of creative types, directors that will bring these ideas up again because they haven't healed themselves off the place of the earth, because we haven't completely evolved past this point of like, okay, so we need to first of all get down to the nitty-gritty science of what this actually is. Like, is this a virus? Is it a bacteria? What's the strain? Can we delete the strain from the chain and, like, you know, get on with our lives. Rather than that, no, it's this whole, like, no, you as the human, you are the one responsible. Mm-hmm. And not just you as a human, it's your entire culture, wherever you came from. And this gets into that very well, but it's very subtle also.
Yeah, definitely.
So I don't know. I just thought it was very interesting that these kinds of horrific tales of these creatures brings about that kind of thought process. And even though it's not obtuse, it's not out there in your face in the film, it's the minor parts that we see that are like, oh no, that's another terrifying thing that can happen.
Mm.
But at the same time, it's just like, no, this is a very subtle, like, commentary we're making on the human psyche and how we treat each other as is.
Yeah, definitely. It doesn't wear its symbolism or its themes on its sleeve and simultaneously gives you room to kind of feel your experience into it and it feel genuine and sincere.
Yeah. They've done very good jobs of this over the years. So with that, though, I believe that we're going to probably get into another episode on this alone because we've barely even gotten onto Robert Eggers' version, which is the main gritty of all of this. But I wanted to first of all mention that Bill Skarsgård is the Count Orlok in the 2024 version. Mm. And there seems to be, with the Skarsgård family, we've got Alexander Skarsgård, mm-hmm. who also played vampire in the show Showtime's True Blood, which is written
Northman.
On the story. Suki.
Yeah, it's Suki.
We've got along with the Skarsgård family, one of the Walter. He played a drummer in he played Faust in the story called Lords of Chaos, which was a movie, a very fictional movie, but about the real life band of Mayhem, who happened to be a Norwegian black metal band. And that is just one of those pinpoints of, man, getting here to there, to the to the black metal and going right back to Transylvanian hunger. I mean, there's some good stuff out there. Yeah, be careful about what certain things are, you know, certain things are a little questionable. But back in the day, but now I don't know. If you hear stuff cold, distant, and you want to frequent yourself with a lot of cold sounding music to accompany your oncoming cold winter with, I think this would be it. And then they also are just very, like, horrific with the way that they sing and the makeup and whatnot, which is also taken from a lot of Japanese stage plays.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's very kabuki.
Very kabuki. All right, with that, we are going to come back for a part two. So this was part one. We're talking about Nosferatu, Vamp. All right. Thank you, Brennan, for joining us. We'll see you in the next episode.
Yep, I'll see you then.
Thanks for tuning in to Ripper. You can find more about this and other LCC Connect podcasts at lccconnect.com.
Featuring the faculty, staff, students, and others that helped to make Lansing's premier college what it is today. LCC Connect, Mid-Michigan's connection to Lansing Community College. To find out more about our featured programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Lansing Community College Performing Arts presents 1984 by George Orwell, adapted for the stage by Nick Hearn. Winston Smith has been in prison for committing thought crimes against Big Brother. As part of his re-education, he is forced to relive key moments from his past, reenacting his mistakes alongside other thought criminals so that all may learn from his failure, especially his greatest crime of all, falling in love with Julia. George Orwell's 1984 remains a powerful and chilling vision of life under totalitarianism, set against a world of surveillance, control, and fear. Featured in LCC's Dart Auditorium, April 10th through the 12th, and April 17th and 18th. All performances are free to attend. Visit lcc.edu/showinfo for showtime details.
I'm Stephen Cutter, and I host a show called Coach Cut's Corner here on LCC Connect. Coach Cut's Corner is about Lansing Stars baseball program, mental performance, and just getting better in everyday life. You can always find more about LCC Connect shows and listen on demand at lccconnect.org.
Aloha! I'm Ben Hassinger, Michigan's ukulele ambassador and founder of Mighty Uke Day, a celebration of the diminutive yet dynamic ukulele. This year, we'll be kicking things off with a special fundraiser on Saturday, April 11th at the Sir Pizza Old Town Pub. The day begins with our monthly morning meeting of Laugh, the Lansing Area Ukulele Group, followed by concerts, group strums, open mic, a silent auction, and plenty of ukulele fun. Scheduled performers include the Ukulele Kings, Vinyl Resting Place, the PT Strummers, and others to be announced. We'll also be recording the Mighty Uke Day 16 theme song for a viral video release. Join us for this celebration of strumming and singing, Saturday, April 11th at the Sir Pizza Old Town Pub. Proceeds from the Mighty Uke Day benefit the nonprofit Music is the Foundation. For more information and advance tickets, visit MightyUkeDay.com. That's MightyUkeDay.com.
The Modern Warehousing Program through the Job Training Center at Lansing Community College is an industry-led program that prepares individuals for frontline material handling and supply chain logistic positions in medical centers, fulfillment centers, warehouses, and factories. Those who complete this program can earn multiple certifications. Visit lcc.edu/JTC training for more information.
LCC. Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Conversations with Kate is like a conversation with your friend, hairstylist, or therapist, where we will talk about music, life, stories, and everything in between, with interviews and guests sprinkled in. As an LCC student, it's an honor, and I love bringing a fresh perspective to the podcast menu on LCC Connect. I am your host, Kate. Let's get into this episode.
Welcome in, everybody. I'm super excited to chat with you today on this episode called The Power of Everyday Magic. I saw a quote recently that said that if you talk about or you think about positive things, your brain will literally hardwire to seek that out. And so that is what we're doing today. We're going to talk about all things everyday magic. And what does that look like? So magic in the ordinary. When was the last time something small completely shifted your mood? For me, that would be this morning when I got my coffee here in the Gannon building this morning. Nothing beats Blue Owl coffee. How would you redefine magic? In my eyes and in my heart, personally, I don't know about you, redefining magic for me is anything that just kind of sets your soul on fire. And that can be as simply as waking up and putting your favorite coffee creamer in your coffee, which I do have several. I have a little coffee collection going on at home. As you know, we've spoken about this in past episodes. But yeah, redefine magic, not as something mystical, but as a state of attention or appreciation. How do we tend to miss the magic in our day-to-day lives? Why do we miss the magic in our everyday lives? Well, the reality is the pace of this life, we end up overlooking things quite a bit. Busy with work, busy with bills, busy with responsibilities. And we're conditioned to kind of pay attention to that rush, 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 go, 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 responsibilities. And what am I going to do to make sure that I check off all the things on my list or just the stress of everyday life? We're conditioned to chase big moments, milestones, success, and perfection. Who does not know that? We are. Like, that's the golden glitter star that we get. You know, you hit a milestone, you achieve something successfully, or, you know, you are viewed as, or you think you are, your ideal of perfection. And that's kind of one of those things that kind of draws away from our everyday magic. Personally, I have learned and self-taught in the last about year to two about slowing down and finding the magic in every single day. What does that look like? Sometimes that is as simple as just sleeping in. Or if I wake up in the morning at my usual early bird time, staying in bed or going and getting my cup of coffee and coming back to bed. Those types of things. That's a huge thing for me because I was a serial early morning riser for many, many, many years. And teaching myself how to slow down and enjoy slow mornings was a little bit of a feat, but now I really enjoy it. And, you know, when I've had busier times, I don't know about you, sometimes you just need that little respite of like, okay, I love my bed and I'm just going to sit here for a few extra moments. Slowing down can also look like just, you know, sitting on the couch with your favorite television show, binge watching, whether it's something familiar. I personally like to do that with something that I've watched or maybe even a new show. And then, you know, my favorite tea. I know we've talked about this on one of the original episodes. I love making homemade popcorn and I'll sit there sometimes. And that's just a nice little slow down moment for me. Other ways that you can slow down are, you know, kind of just taking your phone, putting it to the side or putting it on do not disturb, going for a walk. And again, put that phone on do not disturb and just listen to music or listen to Hertz music or an audiobook and just enjoy the outdoors, that type of thing. Let's get into micro moments of magic. Some small little examples of everyday magic is laughing with somebody that you love or care about. A lot of times for me, that is with my daughter and my clients every day in the salon. Or music that can bring up or stir an old memory. Who hasn't done that? I absolutely love that. I actually this morning just searched up in my SoundCloud and popped up with a mix that I did on another year and was like, oh yeah, this is great. So that was a nice little moment of magic for me today. The smell of rain. Who doesn't like the smell of rain? I mean, you don't have to, but I do love the smell of rain. Or like your freshly baked pastry, cookie, or bread. A small act of kindness that you do to somebody or that somebody does to you that kind of just like ripples out throughout the day. That's another little form of micro moment of magic. How do you create a magical practice? No, I'm not talking about like a witch magic, but how do you create a magic practice? Build small rituals that spark awe. A morning gratitude list or a mindful walk. I definitely do this every morning and I take a piece of paper and I write down statements that are like, I am, or this is type of thing. And I also write down things that I'm grateful for. And that's another micro magical moment. I've made that time to kind of slow down and just sit and be in gratitude for everything that is going on in my life, where I've come, my home, our dog, school, life, clients, the whole nine yards. When you do that, you know, that is a great magic practice. Lighting a candle, whether it's just, again, while you're in the morning writing your little gratitude list, or like during a meal. I am a through and through Bath and Body Works-aholic, so I usually do that when I get home for whatever season of candle that we're in. And you know, you always have those little moments of like, you know, lighting a candle is so therapeutic and definitely a micro magic moment. I also have a lavender vanilla one that I keep in my bedroom, as well as like those softer, soothing smells for my bedroom. Also, setting intentions before bedtime. A lot of times now, personally, I will play these, it's called Renegade Activations. And before I go to bed, I will turn my phone onto those activations. I'll let it play and I'll go through my nighttime routine. And that way, when I come back in the bedroom, I smell my lavender vanilla. And then I'm listening to that Renegade Activations playlist, which is a solfeggio/Hertz playlist. So if you're interested or it sounds interesting to you, look up renegadeactivations.com. Tying it back to connection. That's a huge one. Everyday magic can be amplified when shared with somebody, right? I don't know about you, but with me, of course, it's always more wonderful when you're tying that magic, that little daily piece of magic or remembrance of magic or reminder of magic when you're experiencing it with someone else. Like, for instance, my daughter and I just took a little quick mom and daughter trip to Miami, and that was our little dose of everyday magic, and that tied it right back to connection. You can also do this through telling stories to each other, listening to music, or again, like I just said, with relationships. I want to invite you to share your moment of magic with me. I would love to hear about it. You can send me an email at conversationswithkate24@gmail.com, or you can send it to me via any of the Conversations with Kate social medias. I'd love to hear about it. I am on all things social media. So who doesn't love to spread magic? And that's why you get together with people and you create those little mini moments of magic. And again, I would love to hear your little moments of magic throughout the day. You know, what you do to create magical moments in the morning. Do you have a morning thing that just makes your day magical? Do you compliment other people, or are there specific things that, you know, when you just see them or hear them that you're like, oh God, that was so magical? And again, I just want to go back over from the beginning, make magic in the ordinary. We do tend to get wrapped up in the stress of day-to-day life and we miss out on that. So I challenge you after hearing this to really think about little things or whatever happens in your life and be like, ooh, that's a little micro magic moment. Let me appreciate that and take the time that you need. Create a slow morning or just a slow afternoon or evening by enjoying your favorite things. One of the other things that I do to kind of create a micro magic moment and create everyday magic is I will buy flowers, and it doesn't take that much money. It's, you know, sometimes $4.99, $3.99, $6.99 from Meijer, and I will put fresh flowers in the living room for my daughter and I. I've been on a kick of honestly buying white flowers. Sometimes it's daisies, sometimes it has been peonies, whatever I can see in the little flower section in Meijer that is white, with some baby's breath. I can't remember the name of the other flowers that I really like that are white there. I want to say a chrysanthemum maybe, but that's just another little piece of everyday magic that you can do. The real magic is seeing the extraordinary in the ordinary. And you already carry a small spark of magic with you every single day. It's just about paying attention to that tiny little spark of magic and recognizing it and enjoying it and bringing it out. Again, I invite you to take the time to, if there's something that sparked your memory or you want to share with me, you can do so at conversationswithkate24@gmail.com or conversationswithkate on all social platforms. Thank you so much for talking with me today about the power of everyday magic. And I look forward to chatting with you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Conversations with Kate. You can find more information on LCC Connect site, as well as all social platforms, Facebook, Instagram, yes, TikTok as well. Big love.
This is WLNZ Lansing. You're listening to LCC Connect, a weekly program that features the voices, vibes, and vision of Lansing Community College. To find out more about LCC Connect programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.